And Nick and I are both here as well.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Molly Glover, Nick Glover, and Tim Wick.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, we talk with author Karen Garst. A SCOTUS decision pushed her into feminist atheist activism, and she's assembled a great book of essays.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Welcome to Geeks Without God. I am your host, Molly Glover. I'm joined, as always, by my co-hosts, Tim Wick.
Hi there.
And Nick Glover.
That's me.
And we are recording remotely over Skype with author Karen Garst. Hi, Karen.
Hey, thanks so much for having me on.
Oh, you're so welcome. Thank you for reaching out to us. It was really a kind of an honor to have you talk about the book that you have put together. It's a really great book of essays, and the title is Women Beyond Belief, Discovering Life Without Religion. It's what, 22 essays plus one of your own essays as well?
There are 22 essays of personal stories, including mine, about leaving religion. And then the appendix is an analysis of how women are treated in the Bible and Christianity.
Yeah, I loved that. Was one of my favorite ones, the subordination of women in the Judeo-Christian tradition, which is just, I mean, we know a little bit of it, but the analytical way it kind of really digs into stuff was, I really liked that a lot.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. So you talk in this book that the main reason that kind of pushed you out of passivity with atheism and into more of an active role was the SCOTUS decision on Burwell versus Hobby Lobby.
Oof.
Yeah, right.
That's a hell of a decision.
And how Karen talks about how that was really the thing that kind of, you know, we talk about on this show about the moment we had where we decided we had to stand up and be counted as atheists. Would you say that's kind of how you felt with that, Karen?
Exactly. I've probably been an atheist for a couple of decades, and we raised our son secular. Mm-hmm. And I was having lunch with a friend of mine who's an author, Pacific Northwest author, and it was 2 days after that SCOTUS decision. And she said, Karen, you should write a book. And I said, well, the only thing I can get pissed about is religion. You know, 2 years later, here we are.
Yeah, I really loved it. One of the things I think our listeners would be very interested in hearing is that the essays come as a really diverse group of women. There's women as young as early 20s, women in their 70s. There's essays from Germany, Peru, South Africa, England, America. There's JWs and Mormons and Seventh-day Adventists and evangelicals and regular old Catholics. It's really amazing.
Well, it's very happenstance. I started out by just asking friends, and some said, oh, sure, I'd love to write about that. And a couple of my friends were born in Europe, so I thought their stories were particularly interesting. And then I had never joined any atheist groups, but I reached out to several of them in the Portland, Oregon area and asked any women if they were interested in writing, and I got some writers that way. And then when I secured a publisher through Pitchstone, he said, well, we probably could use a little more diversity. So I got online through social groups, and I got four or five more that way. So it is really a great diversity.
Yeah, So we've actually had a lot of people on our show from different religious backgrounds, especially different, you know, sects of Christianity. Mm-hmm. There's an essay in there from a woman who was a JW, a Jehovah's Witness, and how she was, while still being a, you know, witness and attending meetings, she was getting increasingly vocal about the disconnect between Jesus's respect for women and Apostle Paul's, like, bullshit.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and then she married a non-JW, and, like, that is something that really opened up her, I don't want to say opened her eyes, but just kind of opened her heart to the possibility of, you know, life beyond belief.
You know, I think the person you're talking about is Kale.
Yes.
Let me just read just a paragraph because I want to talk about this. She gets called before the Jehovah's Witness Tribunal of Elders, these three men, because she slept with a non-Jehovah's Witness. Of course, she wasn't supposed to sleep with anyone before she's married, but...
Well, she's an adult woman, too, right?
Yeah. Like, yeah.
She's in college.
Yeah,
right.
But the elder says to her, "You must consider him a tool of Satan." And she responds, "My face refused to remain neutral as my ears took in this sentence. Did I hear him right? With an expression of incredulity and confusion, I looked back at the elder who'd just spoken and the two others on the panel with him and replied, I don't see how that's possible. I don't think you understand. I love him. This isn't a crush. I love him. I wouldn't be with just anybody. Jehovah's a God of love, and this is love. So I don't see how that is even remotely connected to Satan." Well, and later on, they decide not to disfellowship her. She comes up with some kind of a story.
Yeah.
And she later learns that one of the elders was having an affair. He was married, and he was having an affair with somebody else's wife.
Of course.
And, you know, the hypocrisy of it all just said, okay, I'm done. And I do want to tell you, she married him, and she has two lovely children.
It's really,
sex is bad, but especially bad if a woman wants to do it.
To be fair, not that it would matter.
That's the worst.
Not that it would matter if she had married him and had children.
Right.
Because he's done it. Yeah, because he wasn't.
Because who cares?
It's a really good point that, like, a lot of, and I think this is something that gets touched on in almost every essay, is that women, the women are seen as lesser beings by almost every religion in that way. Oh, and so women feel that, a lot of these women, it seemed like they felt extra pressure as women within the faith. Karen, how did you, when you talked to people, did you, like, do any kind of interviewing, or did they just send you essays and you just kind of edited them?
I met with them each individually, and then the first group that we got together, we went to the Oregon coast for a weekend to little talk about how people were doing with their essays to support each other. And then we've gotten together, obviously, since then. I did, because most of these women weren't professional authors, I hired an editor, which was actually the editor of the person I had lunch with. So it's all circling back.
That's great.
But everyone loved working with her, and I think she really boosted the quality of the essays.
Yeah. So one of the essays, it was Sylvia Benner. And one of the things she talked about that I really liked was this discussion of feminism, the word feminist. And we've talked about that on this podcast.
A lot.
About how a lot of women, you know, to some degree, myself included, don't necessarily want to identify with that phrase because of its baggage. And she really did a great kind of intersection of how religion can have baggage, you know, feminism, this, and like trying to figure out who she was among all these different dogmas, really.
Well, it's a funny story. I hired a marketing person to help me set up, you know, the website and my Facebook page and YouTube and all that kind of stuff. And the first name he suggested to me for my blog was Godless Grandmother. And I said, you know, maybe we don't want to emphasize that I'm a grandmother. let's not do the age thing. And so he came up with Faithless Feminist.
And that is your blog, faithlessfeminist.com.
Exactly. And for me, the word feminist is, you know, I'm a second wave feminist. I came of age in the 60s and 70s. I marched. I did all of that kind of stuff. I was there. One of the things our college did was we put an ad in the newspaper for an abortion hotline in New York because it was the only place it was legal. Unfortunately, it was at Concordia College in Moorhead, Minnesota, which is a Lutheran college, and they impounded all the newspapers. But
yeah, we know about Concordia College. Yeah.
Oh yeah, you're in St. Paul.
We are.
I learned, I didn't know anything about third wave feminism, and I didn't know anything about the pushback on the word feminism. And I think Sylvia does a good job of talking about that. But here's one for you. So after the election, I did the email that I sent to my subscribers, and I said, many of you, I didn't say all, I said many of you, like I, may be disappointed in the election results. So I get this email from one of my subscribers saying she's unsubscribed. She's going to unsubscribe. And she said, you know, you just assume that everyone's a liberal, and I'm a centrist, and I'm still a faithless feminist, but I'm going to unsubscribe to your blog. And I thought, I spent 2 days going, how can somebody be an atheist and a feminist and vote for Trump?
Oh, yeah.
It does seem strange.
Incredible. But what's your impression of that?
You know, I have had such a trouble. I feel like I live in a bit of a bubble because I don't think I know anyone that I would call a friend who voted for Trump. But at the same time, the fact that 52% of white women voted for him makes me feel super ill. Well, I don't understand.
That's so interesting. I was doing a, you know, kind of a draft for an article, and a woman in the Daily Progressive did a really good job of analyzing. She's an African American, and 94% of black women voted for Hillary. And yeah. She was saying, okay, I got the thing about Susan B. Anthony's grave and everyone putting stickers on it. Nobody bothered to go to Sojourner Truth or the other African Americans, you know, like, okay, I get that. But all I wanted of you white feminists was to do the right thing.
Yeah.
And, obviously, they don't.
You know, that's a good lead in about people of color. Do you have any essays by people of color in your book?
Yes. Yes, there are two people who are black and another woman who's mixed race. There's several people who are mixed race. So,
which again, I think is something that gets overlooked a lot. You know, we've talked about this too with Atheism Plus. And how a lot of times, you know, the inclusion is so important, especially in this.
Yeah.
What wave of atheism are we in right now? Is this second or third?
Well, I think one of the essays, the one by Teresa Slaughter, Strotter, I was her name wrong, who's one of the youngest, I think she was 18 when she wrote it, you know, was really not in a bubble. She and her sister were the only ones who were atheists. And how religious African Americans are. I don't know if you've had a chance to read some of the work of Sakiwa Hutchison, but she does a great job, for example, in Moral Combat, talking about the link between African Americans and religion and why they're so tied to it. So I think her essay is good to point that out.
Nick, you were talking about Taylor Duty's essay. You liked that
the
one?
The non-Christian religious
She went
background.
To India?
Yeah.
Our vegan.
The vegan, oh, yeah. Right.
Yeah.
So she was really young.
She's the daughter of a friend of mine.
Excellent.
So for her, I asked my friends, you know, her mom said, well, gee, I'm not really interested. I've been secular. I've never really thought about it. But she said my daughter might, because obviously she was on the trip to India with her when she finally got her epiphany saying, wait a sec, I don't want to do this Seventh-day Adventist camp I've been doing and stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, she went to the Seventh-day Adventist camp, and then that was, she was raised kind of, you know, with no religion-ish, and then kind of found it in this groupthink camp assimilation. And Nick, you went to a Bible camp, right?
Yeah. Just like a Lutheran camp. My grandparents thought, you know, it was obvious that they didn't have like a strong connection to religion anyway. And that was their, oh, send him to a camp that he'll find God there. And all I found were like mean bullying kids.
Who were there other kids? Did it seem like they were really getting into it and maybe finding a fellowship that...
You know, when you're like the weird kid on the outside, it's hard to see, because from that outside, it seems like a monolith, like it's everyone else and then just, you know, you separate.
I can see why Taylor might have, you know, she talks about wanting to find, you know, this belonging.
Yeah.
You can see how that would...
A group.
Having been to camp with lots of singing and...
That's something that even, you know, atheists now talk about is like, I miss a sense of community, or I miss a place, or I miss a feeling of belonging. And there are things like Sunday assembly or...
And it feels like as teenagers, we're looking for that place to belong. And I think teenagers can be very vulnerable at that age to this kind of assimilation.
Oh, yeah, Karen, there's definitely stuff in the book about that. And about...
Well, I... Go ahead.
No, please.
Well, you know, I grew up as a Lutheran, in Bismarck, North Dakota. There weren't all that many choices there, but...
Yeah.
It was my social life. Mm-hmm. I never dated in high school. You know, I was in band and I'd go to the games and play, but our Luther League met every Sunday, and we went bowling, we did roller skating, we had potlucks, and that was a really important group of friends for me.
Absolutely.
So, you know, obviously there's a social aspect, which is certainly key to why people stay in church.
There are, I mean, in a number of these stories, there are women who are saying things like, I was going to church Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and twice on Sunday, or three times a week, and it was my whole world. Like, that's, you know, that's where their family was, that's where their friends were, that's where their whole life and social dynamic was there. And we've heard this story from a lot of people we've had on the podcast, a lot of people we've had writing in as well, saying it's, you reach a crossroads where it's like, in order to, I can either fake it and keep my life, or I can't lie anymore, and that means I might have to take the risk of potentially having, you know, parts of my life abandon me, or abandon or leave parts of my life. It's not an easy choice.
Well, that's certainly true for religions that are exclusionary. Whether it's Mormon or Jehovah's Witness or evangelical, you're supposed to stay in the group. Mm-hmm. And we talked about Kale early on this podcast. And, you know, that's a pseudonym. Because if her cousins and everyone extended family knew that she was an atheist, they could no longer have anything to do with her. Her mother knows, and her aunt knows, and her aunt is a good friend of mine who suggested that she write. But that makes that connection even more important, because if you leave, you're going to lose everybody. And Marcia Abelman, who was in the Church of Christ in Colorado Springs when she and her husband decided to leave the church, not a single one of those people ever had anything to do with them again.
Yeah, we had a Jehovah's Witness who wrote a book about his experiences and talked about the same thing. You know, when you reach that point where you no longer have faith, you're giving up your entire community, because your community is going to shut you out. I did have a question, though, especially, you know, given this is a book about essays by women leaving faith. Did you find that a lot of them, because of the way most faiths work, where they sort of set women up to be subservient to the faith, did you find that a lot of them had an experience that made that more difficult to leave? Because it really does feel like a lot of religions insulate women from everything else but that religion.
Well, that's interesting. I think most of these people were engaged in terms of work community, et cetera. It wasn't kind of the, when I was growing up in the 50s, the stay-at-home mom. Mm-hmm. You know, who had more of a, I think, an issue around being isolated than people do today. Mm-hmm. But the issue of women, I think in particular of Anne Wilcox's essay, where she was taught in this evangelical fundamentalist faith that not only did she commit sin, but because she was a woman, she was sin.
Yeah, and she, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, one of the things she said that really stuck with me, I actually wrote it down, is talking about the way that the training and discipleship that fundamentalist Christians go through. And then if Christians saw other religions using those same tactics, would they call it mind control?
Yeah.
And because she was starting to realize that's what it is. You know, it's just a form of controlling you through your own thoughts by putting that thought, like, you are sin. And you do sin, and you're, you know, and everything. Hell is real. Satan is real. There's punishment waiting.
And she had, you know, she says this in her essay, and I've talked to her. She's a friend of mine. The debilitating perfectionism that ensued from that.
Mm-hmm.
This whole issue of guilt and shame. And Marlene Winnell wrote a book called Leaving the Fold. And I believe she's a psychologist or something like that. And talks about the pull and the long-lasting impact of growing up feeling guilty for something you have no control over.
Right.
And Anne just said, you know, it took her so long to process that. She told me a couple of months ago, she was on the beach in Oregon, beautiful, quiet, and she had this epiphany. for the first time, she felt good about herself.
Oh, wow.
I'm whole. I'm a good person. I'm not evil. I can make a difference in this world. And to think of her as an adult waiting that long to feel that way is what is tragic about religion.
Yeah, I think that a lot of the essays really made me feel a sense of, you know, throwing off shackles, you know, feeling free. A lot of them had titles like, you know, The Road to Myself, you know, or like getting, you know, just this idea of finding out who you were, who these women are as you know, self-entities and where they fit in the world without there being the dogma of religion telling them where they fit. And how hard that is to, you know, and I think we, women and men, we both feel that as we come out of religion, because most of us come to atheism from religion, you know, and to find the sense of, well, what now? Who am I now?
You know, I'm sorry, you say that and I almost feel bad for my two kids who are being raised in a secular household,
yeah,
and who were given the option. It was like we said, if you want to learn about religion, you can absolutely do that. And they both decided that they didn't. But I almost feel bad because they never get that feeling of going, wow,
freedom.
Wow, this is what it feels like to not believe in this
the veil
stupid
has been
stuff.
Removed.
Yeah. I've mentioned it before that when I was a kid and I believed, it still bugged me. It all bugged me. I always felt uncomfortable with religion. I always felt uncomfortable talking about God. And when I reached the point where I was like, I cannot believe in this because it doesn't make sense, that was a relief.
Yeah.
It got rid of that disconnect that had been in my brain since I was a kid.
Yeah, Sylvia Benner, one of the other things she talks about is how religion can make you feel like you have a secret, cooler life. Like you're actually a warrior for the Lord. And while maybe you're doing this dumb job or you have to, like, you know, serve people coffee all day or pull a lever all day in a factory or something, like, that's not your real purpose. Your real purpose is awesome. You're Jesus's, you know, warrior on the ground who's going to ascend to heaven in this amazing majesty of whatever later. And so it's almost, you feel special in this secret way, which is, that's hard to get rid of. I experienced a similar thing with my eating disorder and a lot of women and men who have eating disorders have the same thing, like giving that up. Feels like you're giving up something secret and special that was just for you. And I never thought of religion that way. So that essay was really cool.
Well, the thing that was difficult, not difficult, but I would say the regret I had in giving up religion is I always thought that when I died, God would answer all my questions,
yeah,
you know, about the universe or the Big Bang or all of those kind of things. And giving up that intellectually was difficult. But we raised our
that we won't
son,
know.
Yeah, we raised our son in a secular, and I've always told him he needs to credit us a lot for that. But I thought, oh, you know, he's going to really need the Bible stories for literature. So I, you know, I got him this Bible, and I started out, and I said, okay, in the beginning. And then I would tell the story of Eve, and then I would go, of course, you know, they're portraying women because of the goddess, and they're putting down the goddess. And my commentary became so long, I had to quit.
I can't imagine that your kid was, like, super excited.
Yeah, he went into engineering instead of English literature.
Like, probably just as well.
Yeah, just to get away from.
Yeah, Mom, I just wanted a bedtime story, not a feminist deconstruction of the Bible. That's cool.
Exactly. Well, he wouldn't have gotten Milton's Paradise Lost, but I don't think he ever read it. So he's cool.
That's you know, there's plenty of references to things like Dante's Inferno in pop culture. We can get him there.
That's what Wikipedia is for.
Exactly. So I just before, as we're wrapping up here, before we get to five questions, I is there anything about this book that you want listeners to know? Like, I know you've got a lot of great recommendations from a lot of really well-known atheists, authors, and, you know, people who are in the skeptic community. But if you were going to you're pitching it to people who are really into geeky, godless stuff, mostly in Minnesota, and maybe to try to branch them out into more feminist thinking. Is there anything you want our listeners to know?
Well, I think it would be great if they bought it and gave it to a friend. You know, the book really is designed for people, not necessarily women, but people who are on that cusp of saying, I can't leave it. And we all work with models. And if we see like a black president, like that beautiful picture of that little kid looking at Obama,
yeah,
we say, hey, he's a president. I could be a president too. And this book provides models for people to say, oh boy, I don't have it as bad as Anne, or she can do it, I can do it, or that didn't happen to me, good thing. Oh, here's a pathway that Sylvia outlined that I can think about feminism. So there's a wide variety, and you know, when you read the book, skip the ones you don't like. I mean, that's the beauty of an anthology. You know, I'm not getting into this one and skip it, but I think giving it to a friend who's maybe expressed some issues about religion would be the best gift.
Well, and I think the great thing about an anthology like this is when you give it to a friend, you can say, you know, this essay spoke to me a lot. And so you're not handing them the book and say, read all 300 pages. Say, start with this one. It really spoke to me. And then maybe they can work their way out from there and read some of the other stories as well.
I know I'm definitely pointing my mother to your blog and getting her to this book because she just recently came to atheism. She's 62 and it's just been in the last few years she's been able to self-identify that way, as opposed to for a while she was just, you know, I'm a garden variety theist, and then a few other things some other things happened in her life, and then she was like, you know, no, I don't think there's any God at all now. And I was like, cool, Mom, welcome to the club.
Great.
Awesome. Karen Garst, the title of the book is Women Beyond Belief: Discovering Life Without Religion, and you can buy it in stores online. It's I'm sure there's links at faithlessfeminist.com, which is your blog. And it's time for five questions.
Five questions.
Are you ready, Karen?
I am ready, Professor, to answer the question.
It's quiz time, Karen. All right.
All right, question number one. What is a movie that you will stop and watch anytime it's on?
Pretty Woman.
Oh, yes. Anytime Nick is holding something that I have to reach into to like take something out, he likes to pretend to close it on my hand, like that scene with the necklace.
What makes it good is that you're always ready with like a kind of goofy laugh. It's because it's not just the snapping of the fingers on it. It's also for sure.
That's a great movie.
Question number two: what is your geekiest or most prized possession?
Well, I think, let me see, probably one of my most prized possessions is my teddy bear.
Really?
I have a teddy bear from when I was growing up, and it is very, very worn, and it's just interesting looking at that and kind of thinking back, you know, what did I hold it when I was scared? Did I drag it around with me? But it's something I've held on to for a very long time. So it's one of my favorites. I have a few things from my childhood that I've kept, and that's one of them.
That's great. I have a similar, like, you know, it's a sheep, but yeah, like where you just remember times when you were little and maybe cried into it, or just it was there at your, you know, I used to throw parties, you know, not tea parties. They were like soirees that I would throw for my animals. Fancy parties like my grandma had.
Yeah, I had a favorite teddy bear, and I loved it to the point that I destroyed it. And that's probably the only reason I don't have it.
It's a metaphor.
I was just going to say, it's a metaphor. That's what it's all about.
So there you go. There's a story about my kids 20 years from now.
Question number three: which supernatural, magical, or all-powerful being or deity, whatever, do you wish were real?
The goddess.
Oh, like Mother Gaia, Earth Goddess, or?
Yes.
Yeah. I like the idea of that. When I was a Wiccan, Dianic Wicca always, you know, appealed to me, the idea of it being this soul, like, you know, from women comes life, and therefore, you know, respecting that and worshiping that as a, you know, moon goddess, you know, earth thing.
Well, and I think what's really interesting is the cycles that she represented. You mentioned earth and death. Mm-hmm. It was a whole complete thing. Mm-hmm. It wasn't one versus the other. They hadn't come up with this dualism that the Persians and the Greeks came, you know, the either-or duality. And she was so attuned with women because of the cycles.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think, with men too.
I think back to Paleolithic, and people seeing that women had their period in conjunction with the lunar cycle, you know, you just like to see the look on their faces going, wow, that's pretty cool.
But yeah. Our brains are just wired for pattern recognition. Mm-hmm. And I mean, when things are so regular like that, either, you know, the seasons, nature, the moon, and anything biological, like women's mm-hmm. periods,
yep.
obviously we're going to pick up on that. And I mean, it's no wonder that religion came from that, or that it was viewed as magical, or
exploited
anything.
It. Yeah, like nothing for else. Sure.
exactly.
All right, question number four. If religion was gone, let's assume religion's gone, what do you think would be the biggest problem that faced us as human beings?
Well, I think we are still, in a way, tribes.
Mm.
And there are so many things that divide us, whether it's culture, language. I think getting rid of religion would help, but I bet people fought each other long before there was religion. So we're going yeah. to have to look at what we have in common versus what we have different.
Mm-hmm. I like that. Yeah, tribalism definitely.
It's probably yeah. the most popular answer we get for the question, well, I think.
You know, even like, you know, in just popular sports, like, you yeah. know, like my team, your team,
right?
And
sure.
we can't be friends. We have to be angry about it. It's yeah. crazy.
Yeah. Question number five, last one. What is your favorite quote?
Well, the one that comes to mind is Sonia Johnson. She was a Mormon who questioned why they were being told not to support the Equal Rights Amendment in the 70s. Mm-hmm. And she eventually got excommunicated from the church. And she said, if women leave the church, religion is dead.
Huh. I love that.
So get on it, ladies.
Yeah. Yep.
Karen, thank you so much. This has been a really enlightening episode, honestly. Yeah. I really enjoyed this. Guys, if you're listening, please go pick up Women Beyond Belief, Discovering Life Without Religion, and visit Karen at faithlessfeminist.com. Is there anything else you want to plug on the show before we go?
No, I'm working on book two.
Working on book two. Is it going to be essays?
It's going to be essays, but it's going to be women atheist authors talking about all the reasons women should leave religion.
I love it. I love it. All right. Well, we'll look for that coming up soon, and maybe we'll talk to you again when it comes out.
Absolutely.
Wonderful. Thank you, Karen. We have been Geeks Without God. If you really enjoyed our show, by all means, continue to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and you can always support us at Patreon. We do take donations there. If you support us at a $2 a month or higher, you get access to episodes like this right away when we record them, as opposed to when we release them. We tend to record a couple at a time, and you get early access. So thanks again, and if you want to answer our five questions, you can send your answers to fivequestions@geekswithoutgod.com. As always, you can always email us anything you want to say, comment on the show. And if you read Women Beyond Belief, Discovering Life Without Religion, I'd love to hear what you think of it. Thanks, everyone. Have a great night. Bye.
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 By day, she was a mild-mannered accountant, but by night, she was the Lord's Warrior.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Need more Geeks Without God? Go to our website, read our blog posts, find us on Facebook, or follow us on Twitter at Geeks Without God.
Social media!
We're geeks.
We're geeks without God.
We're geeks.
We're geeks without God.
We're geeks, geeks without God.
That was a real dick move, Molly.